to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. I hope you'll be with me tomorrow for Film Week at 11 o'clock. There's a new film, a spinoff from the Fast and Furious franchise, Hobbs and Shaw, with Dwayne Johnson, Jason Statham, and Idris Elba. Also, the documentary about the late terrific actor Anton Yelchin, who tragically passed all too soon in an accident at his house. Yelchin's life, his acting career, profiled in Love on Tosha, the documentary. We'll hear what our critics have to say about that tomorrow morning at 11 here on KPCC. Well, golf's participation peaked in 2001 when nearly 30 million people played more than 500 million rounds. In 2017, that figure had dropped to nearly 24 million playing 450 million rounds. Now you might say, wow, you know, that's a big decline. But why should I care if I don't play golf? And even if I do play golf, maybe it means it's easier to get a tee time. Well, one of the reasons is because the popularity of golf has an effect on municipal courses where revenue is generated. It has an effect on real estate development in Southern California, in the Coachella Valley, High Desert, Inland Empire, other communities. You have golf course communities where real estate prices are predicated in part on the golf courses that the developments are built around. With us to talk about the state of golf in America is Candace Taylor. She's a reporter covering residential real estate for the Wall Street Journal and recently wrote on this topic. Candace, good to have you with us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So how is this decline being explained? Is this just younger people aren't willing to devote the time to play a round of golf?
Well, there's a lot of components to it. Yeah, one of it is that younger people, it's not that they don't like golf, but a lot of them don't have 4 hours on a Saturday or Sunday to go out and play. Older folks who love the sport, many of them are playing fewer rounds as well. You know, maybe they're getting older, or maybe they have other interests like biking, or they're trying to keep in shape, all of that. What I hear is people love the game. It's just that they're spending less time playing it for a number of different reasons.
You highlight North San Diego County golf course community where the golf course closed, and then the homeowners are concerned about infill of homes on the golf course because they paid extra to get, you know, is this something that's being repeated in golf course communities where there just isn't the money to maintain the course because there aren't enough people playing?
Yes, this is a huge problem right now all across the country. You know, many parts of California are having this problem. It's a huge problem in Florida. And what happened is they overbuilt too many golf courses in the 80s and 90s, including in these communities that are sort of built around the golf courses. And now that there's not as much demand for golf, that is a problem for the homes that are right there. Because if the golf club or the golf course starts to have financial trouble and it closes, then what happens? Then you're living on, you know, a piece of ugly grass, and you know that's bad for your property values. It causes all kinds of problems, and you know it's very disappointing for people, obviously, among other things, especially like you said, if they paid extra for the golf course and then all of a sudden not only do they not have a golf course, but their real estate values have plummeted. When a course closes, prices can often fall about 25%. And it can fall even more, like 40 or 50% if there's a big legal battle, which often happens. So it's really quite a problem across the country.
So if younger Americans don't age into golf, so to speak, you could be looking at significant exposure in those golf course communities. Candace Taylor of the Wall Street Journal with us. Also with us is Diane Baxter, who is associate broker and executive luxury director at Benny and DeVille Homes, which is based in Indian Wells in the Coachella Valley. Ms. Baxter, good to have you with us. What are you seeing in terms of golf course communities in the Coachella Valley?
What I basically see, because I do quarterly reports and I've been doing them since 2004, what is taking place of the 19 country clubs I track, that the very affluent luxury golf course communities where the homes are selling for over $1 million or more, they are doing extremely well. Membership is going very well. Home sales are going very well. 6 out of the 7 are going to sell more homes this year than last year, even though we have less inventory on the market. So the country clubs that have provided more things than just golf. They've kept up with the times. They've got the health club. They've got the pickleball. They've got all these other events are attracting the younger generation. And so it really, what I've noticed in the desert, we had one club close down. Their real estate sales weren't affected as much as I expected them to be.
Really?
Even with the unknown, but it really comes down to the clubs that have the biggest problem with keeping and retaining membership are those that have not had the capital reserves to be able to put back into the club what is needed to attract the younger generation.
Also joining us is Brian Reed, golf manager and head golf pro for Rancho Simi Recreation and Park District. It oversees Simi Hills Golf Course and the Sinaloa Golf Course. He used to be the general manager at the Brookside, two courses in the Arroyo Seco adjacent to the Rose Bowl. Brian Reed, good to have you with us. I just saw a Pasadena City Council just approved greens fee lowering for the Brookside courses because of the decline in play on those public courses. How much of this? How much of this is a problem for the municipal courses?
Well, thanks for having me. It is a problem. I mean, as Candace mentioned, you know, the overbuilding of the golf industry really, you know, coincided with the growth in the popularity of golf, mainly driven by, you know, when Tiger Woods came on the scene in the 90s. But there were a lot of golf courses built, and, you know, that's been kind of trending back down. And as supply, you know, the number of golfers has dwindled, the supply of golf courses has dwindled, and it makes a pretty competitive marketplace. So there's a lot of golf courses who have had to, you know, address the rates. It's situational. Some communities have more golf courses than others, and so it's more competitive in certain sects. But I read recently that, you know, somewhere around 75% of municipal golf courses in the country operate at a break even or worse. And only, you know, 25 or 30% actually are in the black.
Well, and I thought for a lot of cities, at least in the past, the golf courses threw off revenue that they could use for parks and for other things.
That's true. Some do. I mean, our system operates at a small surplus, and most of the LA systems do also, but a lot of golf courses don't. And there's been a lot of golf courses who have closed. Just in our neighborhood, there's a golf course out in Camarillo called Sterling Hills that was kind of fits the model of what Candace was talking about. With the golf course was built, you know, to support the homes around it. And that increased the value of the lots. The developer built a golf course, made money, walked away, but the golf industry out there was overbuilt already, so the added supply reduced rounds at all the other golf courses around, and so everybody kind of struggled. It's gone bankrupt a couple times, and, you know, now the golf course is barely being maintained. It's, you know, kind of shaggy around the edges, and it's a good example of, you know, how golf courses being overbuilt affected the overall health of the industry.
Brian Reed with us. He's the manager and head golf pro for Rancho Simi Recreation and Park District in Simi Valley. It oversees Simi Hills Golf Course, Sinaloa Golf Course as well. And when we come back, we'll talk with the editorial director for the National Golf Foundation. They do research and consulting to the golf industry, so he'll have a big picture take. We'll talk with Eric Matuszewski about what he sees in the future of golf. Are there going to be younger Americans who age into golf, as we saw with previous generations? Or is just the nature of golf, the long time it takes to play the sport, no Tiger Woods, who's, you know, in the news every week, is that going to make a dent in golf's popularity moving forward? We'll be back in 1 minute on Air Talk. We'll be right back. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up in our next hour, we'll talk about the ongoing battle over the siting of homeless shelters. We'll focus on Koreatown, what's happened there in the wake of protests from residents who didn't want the first location chosen by the city of LA. We'll talk about what's transpired since then. Right now, we look at golf in Southern California, which is a big part of Southern California culture, as it is in much of the Southern United States, the Sun Belt. It's a very big deal affecting real estate prices, lifestyle of people, business deals made on the golf course, and talking about what the decline in the playing of golf means for municipally operated courses, for developments, real estate developments, and just for the future of the sport. With us is Eric Matyshevsky, who is editorial director for the National Golf Foundation. Eric, thank you for being with us. How concerned are people in this industry about getting millennials into the sport?
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much. It's interesting because there has been a lot of attention to that so-called millennial generation and young adults in general. But what we're really seeing right now is fairly stable participation among that group. There's more than 6 million in that 18 to 34 age group who are playing golf. And we're talking about on a golf course. And that makes up about 25% of the golfing population. And that's right in line with where it should be in representation of the overall U.S. population. And when you kind of look at other things like golf entertainment venues like Topgolf, which is a much more easily accessible way to engage with the game, we're seeing them flock to that even more and more. So it's encouraging to see because it's a way for them to start getting engaged with golf in some form. And
what is Topgolf?
Topgolf is a golf entertainment venue where you can go and hit balls and in almost a sports bar atmosphere. It's like a three-story driving range with music and TVs and food and drinks, and it's a really social setting. And it's become a very popular form of what we call off-course golf participation. It's something that we've started to measure at the National Golf Foundation in recent years just because it's another entry point to the game itself.
All right. I'd love to hear from those of you in the golf community, if you're a frequent player, if you are on the business side of this. I'm interested in your observations. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Also, I'm interested culturally, Eric, in analysis the foundation has done. You know, here in the Los Angeles area, golf is very big among Korean Americans. We have a large Korean American population in the greater Los Angeles area. And so, you know, if you're at the driving range or golf course, you just see a lot of Korean Americans who are playing. And, how does that break down, you know, demographically? And did Tiger Woods and his mixed ethnicity help to diversify golf at all?
Well, I think Tiger Woods, there's no question that he helped bring more people into the game at his peak. I mean, you talked about the high water mark in participation, and it was probably a little bit inflated. You had Tiger's popularity, you had a strong economy, and a wealth of new courses that really fueled participation levels. But there was a lot of folks that came in that weren't necessarily committed to the game. And when you talk to golfers, they're a committed bunch. And that number really hasn't changed in recent years. We're talking about 20 million committed golfers who account for almost 95% of all spend and rounds played. So, you know, we're seeing very strong, stable levels of participation right now that are in line with just before Tiger came into the game.
We're talking with Eric Matyshevsky, who is editorial director for the National Golf Foundation. For the municipal courses that are having difficulty, what seems to be, you know, the commonality, Eric? Is it shifting demographics of those communities? Is it that there's just too much competition from private operators? What's going on?
Well, it's a good question. It's one that we face quite a bit recently when it comes to municipal golf. And there actually tends to be some confusion because especially when people hear that courses might be losing money for the government entity. And there's this contention that it might be a reflection on the health of golf overall. But when you think about it, making money isn't necessarily the primary reason that a municipality is going to offer golf as a recreation amenity for its residents. I mean, it's in a lot of ways, it's not going to be much different than the county pool, the library, the local senior center. I mean, a lot of these community amenities themselves aren't exactly money makers. And, you know, one of the problems that we've seen is that some of these municipal golf facilities for years, they were churning out pretty good revenue, and the municipality would take that money in the general fund and use it elsewhere. So they wouldn't update their course infrastructure. They wouldn't put money into irrigation or redoing their cart paths or greens or bunkers or things like that. So with the aging facility and money going elsewhere in the towns, all of a sudden you have more courses popping up, more competition, and they're not going to be able to compete. I mean, you look at the restaurant business. If a restaurant doesn't have that new chef or the new menu, or it's, you know, getting a little bit dated, they're going to be hard pressed to compete.
I think one of the challenges, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, with your analogy, though, about the municipal swimming pool or the senior center and the like, are the number of people per the acre devoted to it. So you've got acres and acres devoted to a municipal golf course versus the number of people that are playing that course on a daily basis. You compare that to municipal swimming pools, to senior centers, and the person per acreage devoted to it. And is that going to make it hard for some cities to justify this?
It can, just because, I mean, when you think about municipal golf facilities and where it really grew up, I mean, that was the formative stages of golf in this country. They were built in and around major cities. And these cities with this, the urban sprawl, they're just getting, you know, they're spreading out more and more. And that land becomes more and more valuable. So, I mean, municipalities are facing tough decisions when it comes to that. And golfers, if the quality isn't there, they might gravitate to other options in and around the city that have been built up in recent years.
All right. I want to thank you so much. That's Eric Matuszewski, who's editorial director for the National Golf Foundation, which consults with the golf industry and does its own research. Candace Taylor reports on residential real estate for The Wall Street Journal. Diane Baxter of Indian Wells, Benny and DeVille Homes, has expertise on particularly the luxury high end of residential real estate in golf course communities. And Brian Reed is golf manager and the head golf professional for Rancho Simi Recreation and Park District, providing that municipal perspective. Wonderful to have you with us on Air Talk on 89.3. Hard to believe we're halfway through the program. It's gone so fast. We have much more to come in the second hour. And I want to remind you that Film Week comes your way tomorrow at 11 o'clock. In addition to reviews of the week's films, we'll also bring you the post-screening conversation from our Film Week screening at the Theater at Ace Hotel last Saturday night. It was Boogie Nights we showed on screen. We had a wonderful four-person panel, including the producer of the film, the costume designer, Tim Cogshell, our Film Week critic, Cal State Long Beach professor, gender studies and sexuality studies. Well, you'll hear that tomorrow on Film Week at 11.